Welcome to Prophecy Radio, the Percy Jackson podcast that will keep you up to date on all things Rick Riordan and Rick Riordan Presents, including upcoming books, adaptations, and more. This is episode number 77. I also have the wrong doc open. We were just talking about that.
Oops.
This is episode number 77. My name is Karen. Your name is Kristen.
And I have not taken a sip of my brand new hot tea, and I'm afraid I'm going to burn myself live on the air. It's going to be a really funny noise that I'm going to make when this
happens. Where are our docs?
What happened?
I don't know. I got lost. Got lost in Google Docs.
Do you need me to send you a link?
No.
Because I can do that.
Okay. There we go. I saw Lance Reddick at the top again. I was like, that's wrong. We did that last week.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yes. So here we go. Kristen had to make the doc this time because I completely forgot.
So if we start talking about the exact same things we talked about last week, it's because Kristen forgot to delete a part. But I think I did okay.
Yeah, no, you did
great. Sure, what were you saying?
That I'm finishing up a book right now, so I'm trying to get that done. And I was in panic mode yesterday and frustration mode because there's like one small bit of the book that I'm trying to figure out, and I can't really write anything until I figure out this detail that is small but important, and I forgot we had to record today, so Kristen to the rescue.
It happens. No worries.
Yeah. But hey, it's April now.
It is.
We are a month out from the sun and the star, so that's pretty exciting, and I feel like spring's creeping up on us, and
thank goodness.
Yeah.
I am so ready for some warm temperatures.
Yeah, so am I. I feel like the days are looking nicer.
Yes.
But they're not feeling nicer.
Yes.
They're so a little chilly.
It's sunnier, but we're getting more like 50s, 60s, which
it's
is...
It's been raining a lot too, but hey, that's better than snow, so...
Very, very
I'll take it. If you would like to contact us, you can do so at Prophecy Podcast on Twitter, at Prophecy Radio Podcast on Tumblr, Instagram, and Facebook, and Prophecy Radio Podcast at gmail.com. This is our sort of miscellaneous catch-up episode. It's not really a catch-up episode. I don't feel like super behind.
No.
But we wanted to talk about just a random mishmash of things. So we thought, hey, this will be a nice chill episode. We'll just kind of talk about some stuff at our leisure.
Odds and ends. Miscellaneous. Yeah. That kind of thing.
Yeah.
Just kind of wrap up all these little baby things that we wanted to do last week, but was just too much to try and fit into that episode.
Yeah. And that, I mean, that episode wasn't like super long, but we jam-packed it full of stuff about Lance.
We did. We absolutely did.
Yeah, I'm glad we waited on some of this other stuff.
Yeah.
And Reed Riordan did come out with a couple different articles this week, the first of which was titled Who Was Bianca D'Angelo? And of course, this is sort of like in preparation for The Sun and the Star because Nico is her brother, and we kind of think maybe... I mean, if nothing else, there will be references to her and maybe some, like, memories or stuff that we haven't seen before, which would be pretty cool. I would like to see a little bit more of, like, their childhoods and what he remembers from that time.
Yeah.
They were either in the Lotus Hotel and Casino or maybe even before that, if he actually remembers anything.
Yeah, yeah.
And I thought this was actually really interesting because the last time Bianca was mentioned, I'm pretty sure Reed Riordan hadn't talked about the fact that she had been reincarnated because we had a whole conversation about this because we had forgotten since that's like in Heroes of Olympus, I think, is where we learned that.
Yeah.
So we had forgotten and people in the fandom had like mentioned it. But this time Reed Riordan was like, but last we heard, Bianca has chosen to undergo the process of rebirth. Whether or not we will one day see a reincarnated version of Bianca hanging out at Camp Half-Blood remains up in the air. And I was like, okay, they acknowledged it in this one, so, like, that's good. But also, like, kind of a cool concept that one day maybe she'll end up back at Camp Half-Blood. How long will that take? But my big question was, can Nico recognize reincarnated souls?
That's a really good question.
Yeah.
Like, I would expect nobody else to be able to. Like, no one else is gonna know. But because he's Nico, and not everyone goes for rebirth. Not everyone goes for. So, like, is that a special marking? Can you tell? You know, can he tell? Can other, you know, that would be interesting.
I don't know that they've ever, like, talked about that necessarily. So I'm really curious if that could end up being, like, a plot point down the line. Although, in terms of, like, the timeline where we last saw Bianca, it's only been, like, a year or something. So I would assume she, you know, rebirth is reborn into a baby, not into a teenager or something.
Correct.
So even if he could recognize her soul, she would be a little baby Bianca.
Yeah.
So
like, give it like 18 years.
Yeah.
12 years, 13 12 years. 12
probably, yeah. Maybe a little less, like 7. You know, Annabeth was 7 when she like ran away and came to camp, so. True. But that's still a long time, and I don't know. Rick is pretty, he likes to keep Percy at 17. He's been 17 for a while, so I don't know that we're going to
ever have a chance. Yeah.
Unless, spin-off series.
Right.
Bianca D'Angelo Reborn. That's a cool title, actually. That would be kind of neat.
I mean, yeah.
Jump ahead, have old man Percy.
I was gonna say.
Yeah.
And it could be kind of its own thing. Like, he could still have 17-year-old Percy if he wants. But he can also write a book where Percy is an old man.
Yeah. Maybe old man Percy and old lady Annabeth have a child, and that child is Bianca D'Angelo.
Okay.
Do you like that idea? I can't tell from your
face. I mean, that would be cute.
It would be kind of cute. Very cyclical.
Yeah.
Interesting. Now we're just pondering.
Yep.
And they also had a second article this week titled April Fool's Day Prank Plans from the Gods and Demigods. And it's got a whole bunch of people in here. Some of them are kind of funny. I did like some of them. Like, Rachel talks about pretending that she had a prophecy, but then accidentally almost sending some people to Tartarus. So she did feel bad about kind of that. And Connor Stoll is like, I can't prank anyone anymore. Everybody's unprankable. Yeah, because you do it every day of the year.
25/7, yeah. Take one day off a year.
And some of the other ones were, I feel like Alex Fierro, I could definitely see being a bit of a prankster, so that's kind of interesting.
Yeah.
But I wanted to tell everybody, be careful of quote-unquote casting news that you see and double-check when it came out. Because today, so on my phone, I have accounts for, like, my personal Prophecy Radio and Subjectify Media. And I got a notification under Subjectify Media that Jensen Ackles had been cast as Apollo in Percy Jackson and the Olympians. I got that today on April 2nd. The tweet is from yesterday. And I was like, I was hesitant. I wasn't going to fall for it. We both really don't like April Fools. So I stayed off of Twitter all day yesterday.
There's just, okay, I can take a prank.
Yes.
I can take a prank. Pranks are fun. Whatever. Disney Dreamlight Valley did a prank yesterday that was completely harmless and totally fun. Sure. But when you start getting my hopes up about actors or new books or whatever, no. No. Do not tell me that we're going to get a thing, even if it's the most ridiculous possible project. Do not tell me we're going to get a thing and then just be like, oh, just kidding. It's April Fool's Day. I don't want to hear that. I also hate it when the news does it, like any online news, whatever, comes up with some, like, absolutely, you know, ridiculous headlines. And I'm like, I just want the real news.
Yeah.
Like, I follow you for the real news, not for...
Or even the slightly plausible ones where you're like, this could be true, but I can't believe anything today. When we wrote for Hypebol, we used to do, as a group, collectively, used to do April Fool's Day articles all the time. Never really enjoyed doing them.
Nope.
So some of the other people handled that. And I remember Laura doing one about
Super Hula.
Yes. And she got, like, death threats and, like, emails for years after that. Years.
Because the article kept popping up in people's, like, lists who have any of the Supernatural, Doctor Who, or Sherlock fandoms.
Right.
They were all, like, so connected that this article just kept popping up and popping up for people. And, yeah, she had so much hate mail.
Yes.
For so long.
She could handle it, at least. Yeah. She's been around for a while. Like, she knows how to deal with it.
I was like,
it,
she was a big part of the Twilight craze. Like, yeah. She ran the lexicon or something like that.
Twilight lexicon.
So, like, she had a very good mindset for handling that sort of abuse. I would have been crying in a corner. So I'm glad it happened to someone who could handle it.
Yes, exactly. But yeah, Kristen and I will never prank you. And
yeah, no, that's not happening.
I tried really hard to just stay away from everything yesterday because I'm very gullible and I don't like to be tricked, even if it's, you know, harmless.
I went grocery shopping, took a nap, and then watched some old TV. So I was safe.
Yeah, there you go. That works.
Safe from the internet.
Yeah. There's also a quiz this week from Reed Riordan, which we are going to take. This is one of my favorite things to do. And it's how to tell if you've become a Rick Riordan Presents sidekick.
Yeah.
That was us rewinding the clock, because this turns out not to be a quiz.
Rude.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I said this last week. Nobody called me out on it. Thanks, guys. I was so excited to do a quiz. This is not a quiz. It's just an article for how to tell if you've become a Rick Riordan Presents sidekick. I don't know why I thought it was a quiz. So, that's disappointing.
Yeah.
I really wanted to take a quiz.
I know.
Oh, well.
There'll be another one soon, I'm sure.
That's true. Okay, so that one's a little bit outdated at this point, but I will link to it as well. And wah, wah, wah.
It's all right. We'll just keep rolling with the punches around here.
But hey, at least we have a blog post from Rick, which is very exciting. This one came out on the 27th, titled A Spring Update. And the first half of it is basically just a reminder of all of the next books that are coming out. So we have The Sun and the Star on May 2nd, Last Canto of the Dead on May 16th, which is the second Ballad and Dagger book, The Last Fallen Realm on June 6th, which is the third and final The Last Fallen Star Gifted Clans book from Gracie Kim, Fury of the Dragon Goddess on August 1st, which is the sequel to City of the Plague God, and then Chalice of the Gods, the Percy Jackson book number 6, on September 26th. So, I mean, that's a good amount of stuff coming up.
Yeah.
So we've got nothing for July. And September, there's going to be a lot more to September, too. He was just talking about his specific books during that section, but there will be several books in September coming out from Rick Riordan Presents.
I was going to say, I'm sure there will be a summer update in which we will get the upcoming books from for the fall.
Yeah. So the rest of this is dedicated to filming and basically the fact that Mythomagic, the production company that Rick and Becky started in 2020, has been very busy the last few years and will continue to be quite busy, which is pretty exciting. And I just wanted to read through some of these updates because it doesn't give us, like, huge news, but it definitely hints at some really interesting things going on. Mm-hmm. So he says, the first season of Disney Plus's Percy Jackson and the Olympians is now in post-production. This means we finished all the filming and are editing the episodes, choosing scenes, putting them together, adding the music and special effects, all massive undertakings that require many months of work. This is one way in which publishing and television production are not too different. Each episode goes through countless drafts and revisions until everyone is satisfied that we have the best possible cut. It takes lots of time. I have no updates on a release date, but you can check my previous blog post for the best guesses about how long the process will take. All I can say now is that the 8 episodes of season 1 are shaping up beautifully, and I think you'll be delighted with the results. I've learned so much going through this process. The whole team was incredible, but special shout out to our hardworking actors. They make the show. So, of course, that's very exciting, knowing that things are getting wrapped up, that they're putting the final touches on the episodes and doing all of the special effects and all of that. And I think in terms of the release date, like Rick has obviously previously mentioned 2024, we're kind of wondering if it could be early 2024, but I don't think that he's really done like any specific quarter of the year or like season or anything like that. So we'll just have to wait. But usually I would say a year after filming wraps would be a good-ish time, unless they want to hold it for the summer.
Right. That would be the only real thing. And depending on, because Disney Plus is not one like Netflix where they like having seven big series all playing at the same time. So like when Mandalorian's coming back next year, if they've got any other like tentpole big series that are going to be coming back next year, that might move where Percy comes out at.
Right. Yeah.
So like if Mandalorian's not coming back until like March or April, then maybe Percy would take the beginning of the year, something like that. So we'll just have to keep an eye on what we, you know, what we find out. See if we can figure it out before they even tell us. Just kidding. We will never know. We won't know until they tell us.
It is fun guessing.
It is. It's good fun.
He goes on to say, meanwhile, we have started work on the writer's room for season 2. This does not mean the second season has been greenlit yet. It's too early for that. But we have been approved to start developing scripts. And I think everyone's expectation is that a second season will happen if all goes as planned. It sure is exciting to be part of the room, though. We've broken down the action of the second Percy Jackson book, The Sea of Monsters, into a series of episodes and have begun outlining what the first episodes would look like. I love imagining the introduction of Tyson, our favorite Cyclops, and it's so helpful to picture our amazing actors in their ongoing roles as I am visualizing the season. A bigger role for Clarice LaRue, the incredible Dior Goodjohn? Yes, please. More Luke Castellan, aka Charlie Bushnell? Sign me up. Percy, Walker, Grover, Arian, and Annabeth, Leah. Braving the scenes from the second novel, I can't wait. And party ponies! While we were filming season 1, I explained to Glenn Turman, Chiron, who the party ponies were, and he laughed and laughed. He said, I think I have some friends I could call. Can't wait to see that scene. My usual disclaimer, this is all hypothetical at this point. We have big plans, but nothing is greenlit past the writer's room, and nothing is set in stone. Fingers crossed, though, the first season does as well as we hope and leads to an even greater second. I continue to be in the writer's room every day, weighing in on every creative decision.
So as long as we all promise to watch the show 4 times through in the first month,
yes,
we should have enough. No, I'm just kidding.
Can we just play it on loop? Like,
right?
As an episode comes out, play it until the next episode comes out.
I mean,
we could try.
We can keep trying.
Yeah. I have a feeling it's going to be one of those things that I'm going to end up just, like, putting in the background just as, like, a comfort thing.
Yeah.
My gosh. But the fact that they're already starting on the writer's room for season 2, that they're already trying to figure out what sequences will go in which episodes, that's great news to get approved that early for the writer's room.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, again, as he said, it's all just either in order for them to get greenlit before the first season even airs, it would have to be something that the Disney execs watch and go, there's no way this isn't going to be amazing.
Right. Like, which I could see happening.
Which could happen. It's not out of the realm of possibility. But most shows have to at least air their first couple of episodes before they really get looked at for that. So it is great that we're not even done with post-production yet, and they're already working out season 2 in the writer's room. I think Disney is ready to bank on this as a big, you know, tentpole kids family series, like wants, you know, families to be able to watch this. Because, you know, like, Mandalorian, it's kind of a family series, but it is a little bit violent. It has some, you know, kind of deep, darker themes going on, too. So this is a little more designed for families with kids and middle-aged kids. And even your younger kids are going to find things to enjoy in here.
Yeah.
So I really, I feel like Disney is, I think they're going to be on board. But it's nice to know that they're at least letting them, you know, get the second season worked out so that if/when it does get greenlit, they can just hop right on in with starting pre-production and getting, you know, storyboards and figuring out what kind of sets they need and all that stuff.
Right, so. Yeah. Because, I mean, realistically, I don't know exactly how long it would take for them to, like, actually go into production for season 2, but if it would, I don't feel like later this year it would probably be, but like it could be very early next year. And if that's the case, we could be seeing, depends on, I guess, how long they shoot for as well. I'm trying to think of like, could we get season two in 2025? But I feel like that might be too soon. It'd probably be 2026.
I was gonna say maybe late quarter 2025. It would depend on when in 2024 we get the first.
Right.
Because like if we get it early, then they would have almost 2 years to get it out by the end of 2025.
Mm-hmm.
So like that's a possibility. But if we don't get the first season until August or something, then it would probably, I would think, make it closer to 2026.
I'm also curious too, because they had to build a lot of foundation with season one, not just on screen, obviously, but even behind the camera, you know, sets and just a lot of that kind of stuff. Whereas that's not going to take as long, like pre-production shouldn't take as long for season two, because a lot of that will be established. They have their actors, they have their crew, you
Correct,
know?
Yeah.
So there's a chance that season two could kind of move a little faster.
I would think, yeah.
Yeah, so that could be a good sign too.
Yeah, getting the actual green light is like the thing. Once they get that, yeah, I would feel like production probably would move a little quicker, because they've already got, they know they use the, whatchamacallit?
The stage.
The production stage with the screens that, I forget what we called it.
No, I can't remember either.
But anyway, they already kind of have that settled. They've worked with it, they've used it, so it would just be a matter of booking time on that stage, making sure it's reserved, which I can't imagine they haven't already at least thought through. Like, when are we going to shoot stuff? When are we, you know. So, it's just a matter of waiting for that ever-important green light, which, you know, they could give it to us this fall if they felt like it. It could happen.
It's called the volume stage.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so that was annoying. I don't know why that was so hard to remember, but yes, it's called the volume stage. So, yeah, I mean, they're already gonna, even the decisions down to, like, what do we want the show to look like? What is the vibe we're going for? Like, all of that is already going to be established. So I think season two will be a lot more seamless. I'm also really interested in, not that we don't know, I don't think, what the budget is for season one, but I would imagine that there's a very large chance that season two will have a larger budget, because
if it's a proven entity, a lot of times they'll give you more.
Yeah, they'll give you a little bit more. And if they're possibly not, you know, they could put it toward other things. And depending on the special effects and stuff like that, there could be more. There's probably more of that, I would say, in season two with all of the monsters and everything going on. So,
and the ship.
Yeah, I mean, so there's a huge chance that could end up being a good talking point down the line at some point, too. But either way, they are working on season two right now, and that is very, very, very exciting.
Exactly. That's the takeaway here, is that season two is being born as we speak. Like, they're working on it, which I love.
So, he also goes on to say, Daughter of the Deep, as I previously reported, my homage to Jules Verne's Captain Nemo Adventures is being developed for a live-action feature film at Disney+. My co-writer, Aditi Kapil, and I recently finished the script, which is now with our development partners at the Gotham Group. Once we get their notes and make a few last tweaks, we will send it to the studio and see what they think. The revision process can be long and complicated, as I mentioned above, but I think we're in good shape so far. The script will have to be finished and approved, though, before we move into next steps like finding a director, then casting. Stay tuned. So, I mean, having the script done, though, is, like, very important.
It is.
That is definitely the first step in that process, but I can't wait for the casting to come out, and I'm very curious, because this is, like, also kind of young, like, will we know who any of these kids are? You know, I think that would be really interesting.
Definitely.
And then moving on to the Red Pyramid, he says, the Red Pyramid script is a good example of how complicated the adaptation process can be. We've been developing this for a live-action feature film at Netflix for over 2 years now, and have seen some great progress in the drafts of the script. It just takes time to get everyone's notes, do new drafts, revise, revise, and revise. Just like writing a book, except with way more people involved. We are about ready to send the latest draft to our studio partners at Netflix, and hopefully that will give us a good indication where we are and whether we're ready to move into the next stages of production. So it sounds like this is actually very interesting because they have been working on King Chronicles for longer than Daughter of the Deep, but Daughter of the Deep sounds like it's a little bit ahead of, in the process.
Yeah, it might also have something to do with, because Daughter of the Deep is with Disney and they've been working with him so well over the last, you know, 2-3 years on Percy Jackson, I'm sure it makes the whole process easier. Mm-hmm. Like, she and Rick are working really well together on that, but she's new to the Disney, like, to at least to Rick and Disney.
Right, right.
So, like, they figuring out their thing, like, but Rick knows the people working on, you know, mm-hmm. behind the scenes with all of this because he's been there for 3 years working on Percy. So it kind of helps to kind of smooth the way, I would say. Yeah. So that's probably why. Plus, this is just me pontificating.
Ooh, good word.
I think Netflix is harder to deal with.
I was going to say the same thing. Yeah, I was going to say
that. I think Netflix is a little choosier. I think they're a little bit of a pain in the butt when it comes to getting the script where they want it, because they know what's worked for them in the past. They know what action movies do well. They know what kids movies have done well for them, and they know what they're looking for. So I'm curious if that's not maybe why is they're a little pickier and they want things done the way they want. And Rick's trying to make sure that that works with his story. And yeah.
Yeah, so. I think, too, that Kane Chronicles is definitely going to be a bit more of a complicated story with all of the gods and everything like that. I wouldn't be surprised if that script just has to, like, needs more time to kind of marinate and, like, get things through. But how do you like this fan art? We're seeing, you kind of know who these people are now.
Yeah. And the kitten.
And the cat. Mm. Muffin, that's its name, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we see the necklaces, so that's pretty cool. I like it.
Yeah. It's very interesting.
Last paragraph is maybe the most exciting paragraph. Says, now, some of you are asking, what about Magnus Chase? Don't worry, I haven't forgotten about Magnus. As you can tell from all the things I've described above, we've been a little busy. Nevertheless, we are in early discussions about what sort of adaptation would be best for our favorite Valhalla warrior and are working on developing some materials to pitch. More on that when I have more I can say. So,
Karen's freaking out.
Me and everybody else went animation because I think Magnus, I don't want to say more than the other ones, because I think just the way that the, like, magic and powers and work stuff, all of these would be great as animation, but there's just something about it where I think Magnus could be really cool as an animated series, and I would love to see that, something in the style of, like, maybe the Dragon Prince or even Avatar and Korra, like, something like that I think would be really cool. I think they're actually, aren't they made by the same people? Isn't Dragon Prince from the people who did Avatar?
I don't know. Dragon Prince was Netflix.
Yeah.
Avatar was more Nickelodeon, but I don't know who did.
Yeah, I can't remember.
It's possible.
The Dragon Prince was co-created by Aaron Ehas. I don't know how to say his last name. I apologize. Who is also the head writer and co-executive producer of Avatar The Last Airbender. So that's why those are kind of, like, linked in my brain, but I feel like, you know, something in that style would look really good for Magnus.
Yeah.
And, but just knowing that they are thinking about this, that they're working on it, and that they're gathering materials, and the fact that he says, like, what sort of adaptation makes me wonder if they're really looking at every avenue. Rick has talked before about having a deep love of animation and anime specifically, and really wanting the Percy Jackson series to be live action, but I'm not going to rule out animation for Magnus Chase, so.
And I mean, you know, them deciding to do an animated series for Magnus wouldn't mean that they could never do a live action series either.
True.
If at some point, you know, they wanted to have the live action to kind of go with it, they can always, you know, look into that. But I feel like it's almost destined for one of Rick's series to end up with an animated adaptation. Yeah. They feel like they could all be animated. I wrote an article a million years ago about how Percy Jackson would make a great animated series, and I stand by it.
I still think about that article all the time. Yeah, because
I really do feel like it could make an absolutely incredible, really fun animated series. I understand that right now making live action versions of these books and stories and things has been kind of the thing to do, but I feel like sometimes, especially with things as imaginative as like Magnus Chase, where he starts the story dead, it almost would work better as an animated series because then you could play with all of the magic and things. It'll be easier to make that magic really come alive as opposed to trying to do it in live action.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Percy, I feel like, is a little more grounded. There's magic in that, but a lot of it does kind of obey the laws of physics. So, like, it's not completely out there to do it in physical form in live action.
Right.
But when it comes to, like, series that are a little more heavily leaning on the magic of this and that, I feel like sometimes animation would be the way to go. Like, just a better way.
Yeah.
So, I would be very excited to see Magnus get an animated series.
When we were talking about this on Twitter, Arnav at ArnavG17 I was chatting with them about this too, because they brought up a good point that because there is a crossover between Percy Jackson and Magnus Chase, like there is a specific point in time when Magnus Chase starts, that it could kind of convolute the timeline between the live action Percy Jackson show and whatever form Magnus ends up taking.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like they could find a workaround for that. It could be set slightly in the future of the live-action Percy Jackson show, or they could decide not to really cross it over. I don't know how that would work exactly,
but
I think that I feel like they could figure out a fix for that where whenever it decides to get off the ground, which probably won't be for several years now.
I mean, we just listed all the things he's currently working on in addition to still writing books.
Right.
I don't think he needs another project.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not going to complain if we get another one.
Exactly.
But I do hope that if it does get off the ground, that he will still have time to be involved. And that I think that he's obviously protective enough of his work that he's not really going to, like, hand it off to somebody without trusting that that person is capable of taking care of it. Like The Sun and the Star, which he was still very much involved in, but he did delegate a little bit of it.
Yeah.
And so I just hope, you know, I'm willing to wait for a quality product, basically.
Absolutely. Yeah. And, I mean, animation takes a while, so, like, even if they were to pitch it this year, which would be a thing,
mm-hmm.
it may not get into actual production, for 2 or 3 years, because getting the plot and everything figured out and to a point where you can start animating is a whole thing.
Yeah.
Animation works on a totally different timetable from normal movie production schedules. So, yeah, like, I remember when they made Moana, like, I'm pretty sure they worked on that movie for, like, 8 years or something.
Really?
Like I want to say, you know, even, like, Frozen, I'm pretty sure it was, like, a 6 or 7 year project. Like, it does take a lot longer to get animation off the ground and really moving forward. Mm-hmm. So it'll take a bit longer if that is the direction they go in, but it'll be worth it.
And that's for a 2-hour movie, let alone if they end up doing a 10-episode series or something. So,
exactly. Yeah. Yep. Absolutely.
For sure. The last bit of news I wanted to mention, too, was this whole thing that they were hinting about with Angie Thomas. It turns out that on April 5th, Rick is going to be in conversation with the one and only Angie Thomas at her event for Nick Blake and the Remarkables. This will be in New York City at the Barnes & Noble in Union Square at 6 p.m. And if you're in New York and you can make this event, go. Please go. So I can live vicariously through you, because Rick and Angie on Twitter are just so cute and sweet, and I feel like they're good friends, and this is just going to be an incredible event, and I've heard fantastic things about her book as well. People are really into it.
Nice.
Yeah,
no, that would be fun. That would be a good...
Would be super cool. I used to live closer to New York City, and I could just pop down and...
Pop on the train.
Yeah, well... It was more like a bus, and that was a little scary sometimes, but
it would have been worth it.
Yeah, I could have done it. Now I'm a little farther out, but that's okay. It's what airplanes are for. I can just can't do it as often. That's true. Yeah, for sure. Okay, so this is like low-key our discussion for this week, but it's kind of an extension of the news segment. I wanted to talk about basically Mark Oshiro. I had a chance to interview Mark for Into the Light, their new YA thriller novel. It is now out in the world. It came out on March 28th, so you can pick it up. I do recommend it. Like I said last week, lots of trigger warnings. Lots and lots and lots and lots and lots of trigger warnings. It is very uncomfortable in some places, but it has a hopeful ending, and it has a really good journey throughout, and a really fantastic mystery. I could not solve this mystery until it was literally happening on the page, so that should tell you something about their writing. And I did write a review of the book. It is spoiler-free, so you can check that out on Subjectify Media. I will link to it. I also had an interview. The reason why I talked with Mark was for Into the Light, so I talked to them about the book and their writing process and all of that, and it was really, really interesting. So if you're into seeing how authors write their books, if you like Mark, if you just anything, I think it's a really good interview and I really liked their answers. So please go check that out. I will link to that as well. It is a separate article. And then, because I couldn't help myself, I had to ask them about The Sun and the Star and the book tour. Unfortunately, I wasn't going to try to ask them for spoiler. They weren't going to give it to me anyway. I can guarantee that. But I did not dig into, you know, plot details or anything like that. I just asked a couple of questions. But I thought it was really fun to talk to them about it. And oh my gosh, wait until you hear how excited they are about this book. It is so darn cute. I'm so excited. I can't wait for it. So, without further ado, here's a little snippet of the interview for you guys. And speaking about other dreams coming true, you know I have to ask about The Son of the Star.
Well hold on. Because here's the wild part about this. Because someone asked me this. This kid at a school visit not too long ago was like, oh, was writing Percy Jackson a dream come true? And I was like, no. Because none of us ever thought that was ever going to be a thing.
That's so fair.
It's not a dream I ever entertained at all. I mean, it has become very dream. I certainly do not think it's real.
Right.
Every day I'm like, no, this is an extremely long prank that will be revealed on May.
That would be so devastating.
But I would also respect that. Are you kidding
That's
me?
True.
I would be like,
That's
good
true.
Job. Because yeah. I didn't write the book. So it's not like I faked wrote the book. Oh my God. I would be like, you know what? You earned it. Good job.
Yeah. I mean, when it was announced, I remember watching the live stream of Daughter of the Deep,
yeah,
like book tour, and him announcing you as his co-author. And I was wait. Like, it took so long to actually process it. But I really hope that it's not a long con trick, because that would make me so sad.
Oh, it's very not. With as many pieces as are a part of this thing.
Yeah, that's true.
Oh, God, that I was so nervous during that live stream, because I was just there watching it, but I knew that's when the announcement and I mean, you know, the Percy Jackson fandom, there are few fandoms as unhinged and funny as
yeah
they are.
Yep.
And my phone overheated twice that night, because I remember it was in the evening, like it was a Barnes and Noble event maybe or something like that, and I had to turn my phone off twice because Percy Jackson fans sending me memes and like being so funny. Like, I think my header on Twitter is one of those reactions.
Yep. I just saw it again the other day and I was laughing at it. I remember all of those things happening. It was just so fun to watch.
Yeah. And it has been so fun getting to interact with Percy Jackson fans who have just opened their arms. I think because at the core of it, what I hope is happening here is they're like, oh, they're one of us. Like, this person is clearly, you know, shitposting their way through life, but also deeply cares about these characters and this series or whatnot. And so I always like to like be right in the middle road of like, I do deeply care about this, but I will also make a joke about literally anything in the world. And like, and I feel like that's like the person, like if you're a Percy Jackson stan, that's who you are. You care about the series so much, but it's okay to make fun of things. It's okay to make fun of ourselves. Like we have a sense of humor about it. And I really like that about the fandom. So it has been deeply surreal.
Yeah. And of course, you're going to be meeting a lot of those fans in person on the tour. I'm so excited to see what you and Rick talk about. Rick's slideshows are like legendary. They're always so fantastic.
You have no idea. The basic thing has been written. Oh God, I can literally look at, I don't want to look. I almost want to be, no, I need to, we are going to practice it because we, it's the first time, you know, he's going back. We're both doing things to it.
Right.
There are so many fun photos in it. And, and it is, I think it might be, because I've seen a few of the slideshows over the years. I think it might be my favorite slideshow. Wow. I'm biased, okay. I know. But the the sheer chaos of it is so good. And I really love this. I love that Rick and his team have also opened their arms to me. And they're like, you're going to be part of this wild, wacky process. And we want to make sure you feel like you are an even part of it as well. You know, they were, I mean, even from the beginning, I haven't really talked about this and I'd love to talk about it with you, which is that even from the beginning, Rick was like, your name has to be on the book the same size as mine. It has to be on the spine.
Yes.
You know, you are getting paid the same as me. Everything is split down the middle. You are going to be part. I'm every decision made about the book. I'm involved in all of them. It's like sometimes I get an email that's like, oh, you know, we want your approval on this thing. And I'm like, do you really want my approval? Like, are you sure? And they do care. And it's so genuine. And it has made my love for this series and these people grow a million times more than it already was. You know, I always tell people in this past 2 years since working with the team is they walk the walk, they talk the talk. It is not a facade. They are genuinely deeply caring, very thoughtful people. And I'm just really, really excited to for y'all to see what we did.
I mean, as a fan, that's so important too, just knowing that it's such a collaborative process and all of that.
Very much so. It's been that way from the beginning, like no question at all. I think I'm pretty sure that was said in like the first meeting.
That's amazing.
So from the beginning, yeah.
Yeah.
It's incredible.
It's so exciting. Oh my gosh, I can't wait. You had an Instagram Live a while ago where you talked about how you hadn't seen any fans correctly guess what's going to happen in this book. And no. I think everyone's taken that as a challenge.
And they're still wrong. No one's right.
Really?
Not one even remotely close. Oh, one person has guessed a thing, but it's like 25%.
Oh my gosh.
Not even, and you have to understand, like when I did the audition, and I have talked about this, like, well, I hope I talked about it publicly. If not, you're the first person though. when I did the, cause I still had to audition for the project. I got the outline for the whole book and I would say the outline is more like, I don't know, 80 to 90% of what actually made it in. It didn't change all that much. It's all the stuff in between that sort of changed and we all both got to make up things. But I remember reading it and just being like, I would have never guessed that in a million years, like never in a billion, million, million, quadrillion years. But, and that's the fun thing about it is getting to see Rick's brain work and watching a Percy Jackson book literally be built from the ground up. And it just as a writer, like from a craft perspective, I was like, this is incredible. So currently, no, y'all are still wrong, completely wrong about this book. I think it's going to be really exciting to see react. Like, I'm excited.
Good. I'm so glad.
Yeah. If you go to my website, marcoshare.com/tour, T-O-U-R, you'll see I am very busy these next 3 months. You know, between the tour for Into the Light and The Sun and the Star. And I have some stuff that's going to happen during the summer. I'm already booking stuff in the fall. And I'm just really excited to get out in the world and meet people again.
That's cool. Speaking of which, I'm actually going to be at the Boston Sun and the Star stop. And I hope I get to meet you in person. That would be so exciting.
Yes absolutely.
Wow, we were very good. I'm glad you set aside an hour because that was exactly
I didn't even know. Oh my God, that felt like 20 minutes.
Oh, good. I'm so glad. Oh my gosh, I've been wanting to talk to you for so long. Oh, so,
thank you so much. This was fantastic.
I'm so glad. Yes. And even if I don't get to see you in Boston, I am going to try to set up an interview on the podcast specifically for The Son and the Star. So then you can come back and we can just gush about Percy Jackson.
Yes. And I can finally talk spoilers.
Yes. Oh my gosh.
This is still recording. So I'll say this on, I think that part is the thing I'm really excited to do is to be actually be able to, like, I can talk about Into the Light to some extent on an interview. I am actually a little worried about how to talk about The Son and the Star without spoiling things. And I just want to talk about all the nerdy things that I got to put in there, the nerdy things that Rick got to put in there. I think it's going to be really fun to see people try to guess who came up with what, because I think you're all going to be wrong about that too. and it is, I'm really, really, really excited to talk about that stuff. So
awesome. Thank you so much. I hope you have a great rest of the day. I hope your tour is so much fun. Good luck with all of that.
Thank you, Karen.
Okay, that was the interview with Mark Ashiro about, you know, a portion of the interview, the portion where I talked about The Son and the Star. Unfortunately, Kristen couldn't be there to help me do that, but she listened to it. What did you think? Isn't Mark just delightful?
Yes.
Oh my gosh.
yeah, they just seem like such a enthusiastic and just fandomful person.
Yes. Fandomful. I like that.
I mean, there's just a thing. And I think our generation is the first to really experience it. There were previous generations where fandom was a thing. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, the Star Wars fandom's been around for a while. Star Trek's been around for a while. Yeah. But, like, you had to physically go to these conventions in order to partake in the fandom, really. Mm-hmm. There wasn't a place online. There wasn't all that. So, like, these days, fandom is it's a little world that you can visit every day and check on your, you know, fellow fans and people you know who love the series, and you can read people's imaginative ideas about what could go on, or, you know, alternate realities or whatever. And so it's just, yeah, when you meet someone who has been participating in that as long as you have and gets it, it's different than reading books by the generations that came before that didn't have that little patch of fandom.
Yeah.
And so it's, yeah, like when someone's grown up in that and understands that, and then his writing books that are a part of one, it's different than the generations that came before writing, creating a fandom, and then not really necessarily getting 100% of what it means to be in the fandom, as opposed to, like, the head of it.
Yeah, because, I mean, obviously fandom has been around for a very long time, generations and generations. Back when Sherlock came out, I've had this conversation with Natalie before, the way that people gathered to talk about and discuss all of that, and even, you know, Star Trek was actually one of the biggest early fandoms, and I think Gen X participated in that a little bit later in life, but when we grew up, we had computers and the internet at a reasonably young age, and so when we were into Harry Potter, for example, we were pretty young, about the age of the protagonists, and to be able to find online spaces for that and go to forums and stuff like that was really foundational. And now that we're a little bit older, that has really transformed into social media. Now we use social media to have, like you said, these own worlds where, like, I can get on our Twitter for Prophecy Radio and 80% of my timeline is talking about Percy Jackson all the time. Mm-hmm. I can visit the Percy Jackson fans around the world any time of day at any moment that I want. And these are people that, you know, I'm probably never going to meet in person, but, I mean, some of them might in Boston.
Maybe, yeah.
But most of them I won't, and yet it feels like there's this camaraderie there where we both love the same things. And and this is how I felt about Roseanne A. Brown when she came on the podcast as well. She also felt like one of those fandom people to me, somebody who grew up loving things as deeply as we did, who was super nerdy about the things that she loved, and is now creating her own fandoms and that sort of thing. And I think Mark is exactly the same way. And of course, with Mark Does Stuff, which is what they did back in the day, that was a huge part of them participating in various different fandoms and garnered their own fans themselves. And then to now be writing books, it's this weird cyclical thing.
Yeah.
But the fandom fullness never goes away for those types of people. And you can hear it in every word that Mark speaks. They're so excited for this book. And I think they're excited because they're the author and they're giving something to fans.
Mm-hmm.
But also they're excited because this is something that they're a fan of as yeah. well. And to, like, just be a part of that world is something that, I mean, I dream of every day. Like, I would love to be able to be in the same position that they are.
Something that they mentioned in the interview that I don't think we have talking points for was the audition for the
yes.
book.
Mm-hmm.
It never occurred to me that there was a possibility that other people could have auditioned. Now,
right.
Mark was the only one.
I'm pretty sure they talked before about, or Rick mentioned before, that Mark was kind of the first person that they had in mind and that it just, like, it worked out.
Okay. Because,
yeah.
like, when they said that, it started, like, racking my brain. Like, did other people audition for this? Because
yeah.
I can, like, only imagine if there, you know, you don't know you have this project, this dream project, or, you know, not even a dream project.
Yeah. An impossibility project.
That is sitting, you know, right there, and it's in reach, and you just have to get through this audition. You have to prove that, like, you're the right voice for this story, and I don't like that kind of pressure.
I
can only imagine what
yeah.
that felt like, but, like, it's just... Yeah, it's a cool thing to, like, think about, because I was thinking, like, were there other people who auditioned too that, like, didn't get the gig, and I, you know, I feel bad for them, but, like, to be the one that gets a chance to write this character's
mm-hmm.
story, like, we already knew it meant a lot to Mark. We've heard that before.
Right.
But to, like, feel it.
Yeah.
It's just that much more exciting.
Yeah. Oh, I'm so excited. And one of the things that I really took away from talking with Mark is, especially about The Son of the Star, is how they know this fandom. They know the people, the types of people in this fandom, and they said, I always like to be right in the middle of the road. Like, I do deeply care about this, but I will also make a joke about literally anything in the world. And I feel like if you're a Percy Jackson stan, that's who you are. You care about the series so much, but it's okay to make fun of things. It's okay to make fun of ourselves. Like, we have a sense of humor about it, and I really like that about the fandom. And that's what, you know, the fandom's all about. I see that every day on Twitter. People who are like, yeah, you know, us, like, I loved this book 10 plus years ago. I'm definitely not the target audience for it, but I can still enjoy it. And we make jokes about being, you know, old fans all the time. And yet there's always this balance where people are like, I will make fun of the Percy Jackson books if I want to, but if anybody else does, I will defend it until my dying breath.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah. And I just love that Mark feels that on a level that I think not all other authors who could have co-written this book would necessarily.
Yeah. I 100% agree. And yeah, I don't think I've ever heard Mark speak on the book. Like, I've read interviews and stuff.
Right, yeah.
But it's different when you, like, hear the voice that's the person that put this thing into the world that
yeah.
I'm going to read and
yeah.
obsess over. And so, like, it's, you know, to actually hear Mark speak very briefly about Son and the Star, it just got me that much more excited, because
mm-hmm.
it's like, you know, you're literally hearing the excitement in
yeah.
in Mark, and it's exploding, and you can tell, and it just made me that much more excited.
Yeah, I think their energy is something that I really took away from that interview, too. And when they were talking about the book tour and how this is their favorite slideshow, the sheer chaos of it is so good. I was just like, wow. Like, I've been to a handful of Rick's presentations in the past, his tour stops, and it's always so much fun. And, that will always be its own exciting thing. But I think seeing Mark on stage with Rick is, it's almost going to be like one of us is up there. And that's so exciting to me. And I'm just so excited to be able to witness that. And I really liked what they said about the collaboration, too. That from the beginning, they signed off on all the decisions. Their name was going to be the same size as Rick's on the book. They were gushing about the team behind this book and how thoughtful they were. And that they walk the walk and talk the talk. And I feel like that means a lot to me as a fan, not only hearing that from Rick, like, which we kind of knew from the beginning. He was like, yeah, this is 50-50. I think he said that when he announced it and everything. Yeah. But I think even hearing that the team behind it genuinely wanted Mark to sign off on the things that were going to happen in this book, that any changes were made, the cover, you know, I'm sure it was like font choices and stuff like that. And just to hear them be like, you sure you want me to help decide this? Is so funny, but I think it goes to show, you know, they really wanted this to be a collaboration.
I mean, I think any creative knows that, I mean, we've talked about imposter syndrome before.
Yeah.
But I would definitely be like, whatever Rick says, go with it.
Yeah.
Like, they'd be saying, we want your input. We want to make sure, you know, 50-50, we want your input on the cover. Like, what do you think? I'd be like, does Rick like it?
Yeah.
If he does, I'm good. Yeah. It's like, what, you know, like I can imagine maybe seeing one little tiny thing and being like, I would love it if this was maybe a little different. And that would be the only thing I could say.
Yeah.
You know, just because it's hard to want to put yourself on equal footing with someone who has such an incredible, what's the word, back catalog, collection of stories to their credit. Like, you know, Rick has such a wide variety of stories that are accredited to him. And to, like, step in as a newer author, I mean, Mark's been around for a while,
right.
But to, as a newer author, someone who's not as well-known as Rick, and to be treated like an equal the entire way through, not just writing it, but with all of those other decisions and things, like, that just, it makes me that much happier for Mark.
Right.
Like, we all know Rick and Becky are awesome people, and, like, seeing it in practice is also really, really cool.
Because if I'm being perfectly honest, for Rick to be like, hey, you know, I'll handle the cover. Like, of course I want to know what you think, but, like, ultimately, like, I'm going to decide what the cover is. Because this is his world. I wouldn't have been that upset about it.
No!
But the fact that he wanted Mark to make those decisions with him really, really means a lot. And I think goes a long way to just make me feel like Rick really does, every chance he gets, tries to help other people and to bring them into the fold and to, like, open himself up to new perspectives and everything like that. He could have written this Nico book. He could have at some point, and it would have sold well, and nobody would have thought anything else about it.
And he could have written it, had sensitivity readers read through it, looked and made sure, you know, he could have done all the research and wrote this book on his own, and it would have been good and we all would have been happy. But making it, giving Nico a voice through someone like Mark makes the book that much, feel that much more, like, authentic and, you know, and again, Rick could have just done it himself, but he wants the story to feel authentic and real and 100%, you know, he wants it to be the best it can be.
Yes.
And that means getting someone who knows what Nico's going through and what, you know, maybe not a demigod, but you know,
some of the
has a greater understanding of what Nico's going through. And I just, and he definitely picked the right partner
in Mark. I was just going to say that. And now after talking to Mark, I mean, seeing them online and having known about them for, like, probably a decade at this point, like, prior to them becoming an author, I already kind of knew what Mark was like. But, like, actually conversing with them about the book and just feeling the energy and how excited they were, it was incredible, and it makes me so much happier about this book and so much more excited to dig into it.
Yeah.
And of course, Mark also said that one person guessed a thing, like 25% of the book, I think, and that they never would have guessed in a million, million, billion, quadrillion years what was actually going to happen in this book prior to reading the outline.
So, I'm going to say it right now. I think Nico gets turned into a donut.
Okay, I mean, that's...
I'm throwing it out there. I'm trying to think of the most ludicrous thing that could possibly happen.
He was already turned into a stalk of corn.
Right?
So, a donut...
He's going to get turned into a donut.
Right.
And I don't know what happens after
that. Yeah,
but I'm throwing it out there because if it happens in this book, I'm going to feel really, really smart.
Yes. Oh my gosh. Now I want everybody to send in their most unhinged guesses.
Oh, yes!
About, actually, can we do that? Can everybody send us their most unhinged guesses about what will happen in The Son of the Star? And then we'll read them prior to talking about the book.
Yes.
And then we'll see if any of them come close.
Oh my gosh, can you imagine? Mark would love those.
Yes! Yeah! Oh my gosh.
I'm sure they would absolutely love to hear your, like, most ludicrous out there prognostications for what could happen in this book. I'm all about the big words.
You are! Stuff. Man, vocab champion over here. I love it.
My whole brain's working today, not just the half it usually is.
Mark is also very, very excited to talk about spoilers for The Son and the Star and all of the nerdy things that they got to put in there, all of the nerdy things that Rick got to put in there. And my immediate thought was mythomagic. Like, could they be writing about mythomagic and maybe giving us more information about that? I don't know, but I would love it. I would be super into that.
I mean, yeah.
Yeah, it's definitely a possibility. And so, obviously, there are no guarantees to this, but I am working very, very hard to get Mark onto the podcast so we can do a full-blown, spoiler-filled interview with them about The Son and the Star that can hopefully come out within a short amount of time of when the book is released on May 2nd. And once, you know, we get confirmation of that, and I don't even like to, like, speak about it until it's, like, happened. Yeah. And then I'm fine to talk about it because I'm always worried about jinxing it.
Yeah.
But, yeah. So, that was that little interview. It was super cute, and I'm so happy I got to talk to Mark, and hopefully we'll be talking to them again soon. The last bit of, like, kind of news that I wanted to talk about is that Rainbow Crate is doing a... What is it that they do?
It's a dust cover, I think.
Right. It's a new dust cover for the book. And it's basically like one of those subscription boxes for books. You get like other things in it too, I think, right?
I think so.
Yeah.
And just this is... I don't know anything about Rainbow Crate. But I'm guessing that because it's called Rainbow Crate, it probably is pretty gay.
Yes.
Like, I would say it's probably LGBTQIA positive, like, you know.
Yes, it is very gay. The number one book box for queer book lovers.
Nice.
Get the month's best new queer novels delivered to your door monthly, proudly queer owned, which is very exciting. And they said our first book this month is The Son and the Star. I think they're talking about May. Is The Son and the Star by Marcus Shiro and Rick Riordan. We have completely redesigned the dust jacket with a very popular Percy Jackson fan artist.
Ooh.
And trust us, this jacket is gorgeous and a total homage to fans of Nico and Will. Stay tuned for more info. A lot of people were like, is it Valinsky? Like, I feel like it definitely could be because their artwork is incredible.
And legendary. So
yes, definitely. Mark also tweeted about this and said, hi, another secret is out. Y'all are going to lose it when you see the new cover. Also, it's my first Rainbow Crate book, which is very exciting.
Yeah.
You have to sign up to get on a wait list in order to do this. Do you know how that works normally?
I've been on the waitlist for things before. Like, I haven't had a lot of these box things. But I did, like, the Ipsy bag, like, the makeup one a while back. And they put me on the waitlist. And then, like, I got selected and I got an email. And then, basically, they just okayed that I was willing to pay for it. And it went through. So, I would imagine that, like, they start the waitlist now for May. And then they pull straight from the waitlist. Because my guess is if you're a regular Rainbow Crate subscriber, you get first dibs on it. And then whatever, like, if you don't want that crate because those two books aren't books you're reading. Crazy people. You're The Son and the Star. You're all crazy. But, like, if, you know, maybe they don't want the May crate, they can skip it. And then, like, whatever they have in addition to the ones I'm sure they have set aside for new subscribers too. Right. Stuff like that. So I don't know what their numbers look like. I don't know what they're expecting, but if they're willing to take on Sun and the Star, I have a feeling they're planning.
Yeah.
For large numbers, I would hope, because
going to their website, I believe it's $45 US dollars a month, I would guess, for the crate. There are 324 people on the waiting list right now. If you have been invited to purchase off the wait list, your subscription will be starting with the April box. So if you sign up and get selected early, you know, you'll pay for the April one and then have to wait for May for the Sun and the Star. And if you are joining the waitlist, you will be contacted when subscription spots become available. They will be offered exclusively to our waitlist on a first-come, first-serve basis. And you may not be invited for the month that you joined for.
So right now, if you joined the waiting list and you were selected, you would be selected to join for the April box, which I would assume you can continue to get them, and you would get May's. But you would have to pay for both April and May.
Right. Kind of as a, like, once you're subscribing, stay subscribed until you get the May box, and then if you're not interested anymore, you can get off of it.
You would have to find the perfect window to get just May's, because you'd have to get on the wait list and selected in enough time. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm curious how, like, often or how many at a time they give the subscription for, just because, like, I'm sure there's going to be a huge influx of people interested in the Sun and the Star.
Right. Well, my other question is, a lot of these shops will sell individual items after the box has come out. You would be taking a risk, because if there's none left over or whatever, then they won't have any for sale. But a lot of times they will sell individual items from the boxes, and I could imagine they might have extras that they bought of Sun the Star that they would sell. But again, those are going to go fast too. So, like, you know, you may have just as much trouble getting those too.
They do have previous boxes on sale right now. Some of them are down to like $15, so it's a lot cheaper. But yeah, you run the risk of them maybe not having any leftovers. So.
And I just looked, and in their shop, they have a past item shop. Like, they have just the dust jackets for another series that has three books. So the dust jackets alone only cost them $30. So, like, if you're just not sure about signing up for a subscription, because trust me, I always forget to cancel subscriptions. Yeah. I understand the stress. There may be a way, you know, if you can keep an eye out for it, but no guarantees, because you never know what's going to happen with this sort of thing.
I am going to try to get one, because I cannot help myself. I am a glutton for these sort of things. So I will keep you guys updated as I go through the process, I guess. See if I get lucky.
Yeah.
But that's it for this week's discussion. Let's jump right into the King Chronicles.
Yeah, okay. So we are talking about the Red Pyramid, Chapter 4, entitled Kidnapped by a Not-So-Stranger. We're going to do something a little different with recaps. I'm bringing it down to, like, a sentence or two.
Yes.
Very brief. This is I'm calling it the Netflix recap.
Yes.
Like the little description you get for the movie, where once you watch the movie, you're like, that barely describes the chapter. That's what we're going for here.
Because we just want to remind you of where we are in the book, if you've read ahead or if you haven't read this chapter in a while, so that you kind of get an idea, and then we'll talk about all the details.
Okay, so the recap this week. Sadie and Carter almost get arrested, but instead, Uncle Amos ferrets them off to New York instead. Oh, and they take the cat with them.
I mean, I feel like that's actually pretty much what happened in the chapter,
There's a police chief being an idiot, but besides that, we'll get to that in a second. Okay, so now we jump right into our notes. My first note was the Mr. Police Chief dude is frustrated and ready to arrest them because they won't tell him where their father has run off to. And I find this insanely frustrating because he admits in the chapter that their father may have been vaporized. Yes. He set off what they think is a bomb or an explosion in the museum. And yet he's screaming at these children and yelling at them, saying, "Why won't you tell me where your father went?" They don't know.
Yeah.
They thought they saw him sink through the floor. If you don't believe that, because you're an adult and you know better, why won't you believe that they don't know and that he may have died and is gone. So, like, it frustrated me to no end that he just kept yelling at them, tell me where your father went, because how are they supposed to know? You've been looking at them basically the whole time. Like, he got there fairly soon after it went off, and, yeah, I was just mad for them.
And also, if you truly think that he's a terrorist and he meant to blow up this room and himself, like, those kinds of people typically don't bring their children to work for that sort of thing.
And he made a point to bring both of his kids to this. Yeah. He did not think it was going to end the way it ended. So, yeah.
I feel like there's not a lot of logic going on in the brain of this inspector guy, but I don't think there's really supposed to be. This is kind of a means to an end, really.
Yeah. It just, yeah, it burned my, I don't even know. Okay, so the other, another fact that is definitely noteworthy from this chapter, Carter still has his father's work bag. The police chief doesn't seem at all concerned about it. Yeah. And it made, like, Sadie makes a point of pointing out, like, that's evidence? Why isn't the police chief, like, taking it from him? Why is he letting him just carry it around? Like, whatever. So this made me question whether or not the police chief, A, can see it. Is it invisible to people who are outside the realm of influence? Like, you know. Or it's just, like, kind of one of those things from, like, Percy where the mist kind of directs you away from it. So, like, it exists, it's there, but he just, like, maybe the police chief thinks it's Carter's bag. So, of course, he's not going to ask for it. It's not evidence, it's Carter's bag. But, like, you know, it was there on the floor after everything went kaboom. And I don't think Carter picked it up until after the police got there, because I don't remember, like, reading he ran in and grabbed it or whatever. So, it just made me kind of question the magicness of the bag itself.
Yeah, I made note of this too, and I'm not sure if it's just like the inspector, whatever he is, like the police officer, like his eyes slide past it, or that he does see it as something else. I'm not really sure, but it definitely feels important that it can't be seen.
Yeah.
And obviously very useful for whatever is inside. We still don't really know yet, but I'm having a feeling that it's going to be important to Carter and Sadie.
Yeah. Especially considering chapter one of this book where they told us to be careful with the thing in the bag. Okay, so then next item on our list is Gran and Gramps. This is our first real moment with Gran and Gramps. As Sadie was getting picked up, we heard, they were kind of, you know, just off screen. But now we see them in all their glory. Gran is described as frail and colorless, like a stick person. And then Gramps is a former rugby player with beefy arms, a big belly, and eyes sunk deep in his face.
Yeah.
Like someone punched it.
And we find out that
Julius did.
Yeah, which I thought was really interesting. Like, not only do we have the great spatula incident, but, like, he also punched Gramps in the face. So, like, there's a reason why they don't get along. It seems very obvious now.
Yeah.
But we still kind of, we know that it's probably over their mom, because that was kind of like a tough point for everybody, but they never really liked Julius, so
yeah.
I'm curious about more of the details, though. But I wanted to mention that they feel very much like the Dursleys, not just in their, like, physical description, which I could kind of see a little bit, too. Like, you know, Petunia was thin and tall, and Vernon was bigger and stuff like that. But just the fact that they seem like they know about stuff, but they kind of deny that they know about stuff. And they're like, okay, yeah, we're like, we have Sadie for a reason, and it is probably better for their safety that we let them go. And I'm like, this is a bit like the Dursleys.
Well, and as we get on in the chapter, we'll talk about it, but, like, Amos points out that there are things they're doing that make more sense because they know things. And, yeah, it's almost like they're rejecting their knowledge of things. They want everything to just be normal and simple and easy. And yet, because they know a certain amount, they do live their lives slightly different than they normally do.
Right.
Yeah. Definitely two characters. I don't know how much of a role they're going to play in the series, but I think, you know, just like the Dursleys, they exist, and therefore we have to kind of know them.
Yeah.
You know, just in case.
I kind of feel like at some point they're going to have to come around on Carter, and maybe even Julius, depending on what's going on with him.
Yeah.
But I feel like you can't really make them hate Carter forever.
Yeah.
So we'll see, I guess.
I second that. The police inspector's face suddenly goes blank, and he changes his mind from arresting them to deporting them in an instant. And it's clear from anyone who's watched someone be obliviated that someone is messing with this guy's head. Like, he very abruptly changes course from what he's been screaming about for the last chapter and a half and decides they're getting deported, time to go. And then he basically walks out of the room. And so that's all. It feels very abrupt. My first thought was Amos or somebody else from the house. And I'm glad I was right, because it can't all be completely unpredictable.
Right.
I have to be able to intuit something.
Yeah.
But yeah, so Amos was the one messing with his head, and it has worked it so that he can get the kids out of immediate danger and figure out their next step from there. We also learn that Sadie is an American citizen living with her grandparents in London. But I'm curious, like, I mean, there's probably not an answer for this, but, like, if she's been living with her grandparents this whole time, wouldn't she be an English citizen? It seems weird that they can deport her. I mean, I know it's all magic, but it seems weird that she could be deported to America after having spent most of her childhood with her grandparents.
Yeah, I was curious about that, too, just in terms of, like, whether she has a dual citizenship or not. But I wonder if it was just the magic saying, like, we're deporting you, or if it was a very real, like, she's technically an American who lives in England, has a British accent.
Yeah, because, like, you know, if she was born on American soil, she's an American.
Full stop.
Yeah, done. If, you know, both of her parents were American and she was born somewhere else, I believe she still is a full, natural American citizen.
Yeah.
So, like, there's so many ways that that could work, and I don't know anything about their mom, really, so
I briefly looked up, well, I think their mom is British.
British. That's what I thought.
And I briefly looked up that if one of your parents is British, you can apply for citizenship. So it just depends on whether or not she applied.
They applied,
but yeah, I don't know.
Just one of those weird real-world details that you just question. Like,
we have some UK listeners, so maybe one of them can tell us.
If you know all the things, let us know.
Yeah.
So, yeah, the police chief walks out, and as he is walking out, Amos walks in, and Gramps recognizes Amos. We don't find out why right away, but we learn very quickly that Amos is Julius's brother.
Yes, and Sadie and Carter's uncle.
Hmm.
So that's kind of cool.
Very interesting. I noted his please sit down, and, like, it wasn't like he did any magic, but, like, they all just kind of magically sat down. Like, they felt the pull to obey his
wish. It wasn't
even,
like, a conscious thought. They just did it.
Yeah, and so I'm curious what exactly Amos has going on with him, or whether it's a house thing or whatever. I'm very curious as to how he has this much influence over people around him.
Yeah.
And does he, like, have to, like, push it out? Or is it, like, natural that he has to contain that? You know.
I'm very curious when they're going to introduce the rules for, like, the powers and stuff.
Yeah. Definitely interested to figure that out. For sure. Gramps then kind of goes on to talk about Amos and Julius's superstitions, which, you know, we can kind of intuit that it has something to do with the Egyptian gods and all the things going on. Ruby, I'm assuming that's their mom. Did we know her name?
I don't know if we did before, but yeah.
Okay, that's what I thought.
Their mom.
Ruby clearly believed their superstitions too. It's pointed out that by Amos that Gramps and Gran live on the east bank of the river, and that specifically is supposed to provide some sort of protection. Sounds like Ruby convinced them to do it, but, like, they haven't moved. They haven't, you know. So there are some magical influences keeping Gran and Gramps kind of tied to what they're doing.
And I feel like maybe they've seen enough to, like, kind of believe that it could be possible, and maybe they don't want to, like, risk it, or
or at least respect that if it is possible, it will be safer if we do this.
Right.
As opposed to, like, we don't believe it, but just because if it is true, we'll be safer here, we'll stay here. Yeah. Okay, so now it's time to head to New York, to the family mansion in Brooklyn, which I love that Carter's kind of like, mansion in Brooklyn. Like, we have a mansion in Brooklyn. And Amos is like, yeah, it's the family mansion. And apparently Amos has a boat that can get them there in an hour.
That's pretty nice.
I would love that.
Yeah, that would be pretty cool.
I'm trying to think of seasickness. Would I need to worry about
that? Be a bullet boat instead of a bullet train.
But that's still pretty friggin' cool. He also tells them that their father is behind their help for now, which I thought was worth noting. It kind of feels a little like Sally. Like, Percy couldn't help her until he could help her. Right. So, you know, it's kind of the same general idea. Amos did not understand how Sadie could translate the symbol for boat.
Yeah.
She immediately says, oh, it's a boat. And then he says something, he kind of looks at her, and she's like, it looks like a boat. Like, covering up her tracks. But yeah. I find it interesting that Amos has no idea how she's doing that.
Yeah, that is pretty interesting.
Yeah, because he knows all the things. I assumed he would totally know why that was possible, but that definitely added a little more intrigue. Muffin's totally joining them on this adventure. I love that she just comes, like, launching down the stairs, which, again, I'm sure it's Amos influencing her, like, Muffin must come to Sadie, but, yeah. Like, phew.
But also, there's something weird going on with that cat, so maybe the cat was just eavesdropping.
Also a possibility, yeah. That's for sure. And yeah, we already talked about Amos being Julius's brother, so that pretty much wraps up.
Again, not like a ton going on in this chapter, but the reveal of Uncle Amos is pretty interesting to me, and them getting to New York, I feel like that's going to be the big thing that really starts setting us off.
Throughout the chapter, there are little things where Amos can't explain it at the moment, and he keeps telling Carter, like, I'll give you more info in a minute, I'll tell you later, we can't do that right now. So yeah, I feel like getting to New York is the first step in getting answers to what's going on, because it sounds like, you know, getting these two to New York gets them out of immediate danger, but then it clearly sounds like they're going to have to do something to get themselves out of danger. Like, I don't think Amos can make it all go away. Clearly, Sadie and Carter have a bit of an adventure in their future. Not to mention that this is a book written by Rick Riordan, which always includes quests and adventures.
Yeah, and that it's a trilogy, so...
Right, so there's definitely something going on.
There's more to come.
All right, so that brings us to our favorite quotes and our favorite moments. My favorite quote comes from Sadie, who is talking to Amos, who has just stuffed his face full of biscuits and announced that he's taking them away. And Sadie says, excuse me, I'm not going anywhere with some strange man with biscuit on his face. I loved that immediately following that, she's like, because he did. He had biscuit in his whiskers and did not seem at all interested in clearing it out of the way. No. It reminded me a little bit of Ron Swanson and his mustache.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It made me think of that. I get that now because I finished Parks and Rec.
Yeah, she did.
And it made me so happy I want to watch it all over again.
Aw, yes. Karen, what was your favorite quote?
Mine was also from Sadie, and it was right at the beginning of this chapter where she says, I just love family meetings. Very cozy with the Christmas garlands around the fireplace and a nice pot of tea and a detective from Scotland Yard ready to arrest you. That is a very Percy Jackson line, too. I really liked it.
Oh, yeah. No, that one was also in my top, so yeah. I like that one. And then our favorite moments, mine was Muffin running straight down the steps and into Sadie's arms and how that kind of weirded Sadie out. Like, Muffin doesn't do that.
Yeah. You know. If Callie ran down the stairs and jumped into my arms, I would be like, what is happening? I'm not going to question it, but also, what is happening?
What magical being has possessed you?
Yes.
What's your favorite moment?
So Muffin was maybe my favorite one, but I also really liked Uncle Amos just waltzing in and saving the day, because you're very worried for a second that they're going to be in trouble, and like, how are they going to, you know, end up getting to where they need to go, and then Uncle Amos kind of just fixes everything.
Saunters in, takes him to New York, you know, fixes everything. Prophecy Radio is produced by Subjectify Media. Follow our website on Twitter, Facebook, Tumblr, and Instagram at Subjectify Media, or visit us at SubjectifyMedia.com. We are home to three other podcasts as well. You can tune in to Rewatchable for in-depth discussions of your favorite canceled and cult classic TV shows, such as Firefly, Veronica Mars, Avatar The Last Airbender, Buffy, Angel, and more. You can also check out Not About the Weather, which is a general interest show that sometimes features interviews with our favorite creators. And lastly, Not Another Teen Wolf podcast features interviews with the cast and creators and has discussed every episode of the show, as well as the new movie and Jeff Davis's new show Wolfpack is currently getting the same treatment. You can contact Prophecy Radio directly on Twitter at Prophecy Podcast or on Instagram, Facebook, and Tumblr at Prophecy Radio Podcast. You can also email us your long-form thoughts to prophecyradiopodcast@gmail.com. You can find us and our episodes on Spotify, Apple, or any of your favorite podcast platforms. Please consider leaving us a review or a rating. 5-star reviews really help others to find us, and that is awesome. You can leave us questions, comments, ideas for episodes, or content you want to hear from us in any of these places. And we will definitely get back to you and maybe take your suggestions like we've done in the past.
Yeah.
Next week, we are going to look at Olympus Magazine, which if you don't know anything about it, you'll learn a lot more next week. And I'm assuming there's a website or something that yes. If you search for Olympus Magazine probably comes up.
It's with Cosmic Cow Zine. They do a whole bunch of fan zines, and Percy Jackson happens to be one of them. It's called Olympus, and I have both the summer and the winter issues now, and they are so gorgeous, filled with a whole bunch of art, and they come in like a little box of stuff too. It's very, very exciting. So yeah, we're going to talk a little bit about that next week because I think it's a really cool thing, and I think fanzines are amazing and the quality is just incredible. So I want to give them a little shout out.
Absolutely. So yeah, we're going to be talking about that next week, talking about the content and that sort of thing. If you want to check it out online, you can do so beforehand and you'll know exactly what we're talking about. But if not, you'll learn next week, so no pressure.
Yes.
But you should read Chapter 5 of The Red Pyramid because we will be discussing that. So that's your homework.
Yes.
Until then, this is Kristen.
And I'm Karen.
And we're Prophecy Radio signing off. Over and out.